Okay, we have begun. One of the girls asked me on the first Shabbat that, if you remember, I was here with my wife. She noticed that I was speaking with my wife in Hebrew. And I have in a very clear American accent, and my wife has a very American accent. And she asked, why do we speak Hebrew? And we speak Hebrew with our children. And I mentioned that I wrote a 200-page book called Laharim et HaDegel, Toda Rabba, on the importance and about the mitzvah of speaking Hebrew. And that's really what we're going to talk about today. I'm not coming here to say that everybody should speak Hebrew with their spouse or with their children. But one thing for sure, all Jews should know the Hebrew language. And what we're going to see is that, as opposed to other languages, which are national, right? The French, patriotic, they like the French language. And the Italians like the Italian language. So obviously, we Jews, we should like our national language, Hebrew. Especially Kal Vachomer, if we're the chosen people, right? Some of you were in questions in Emunah. If we're the chosen people, so how much more so should we be proud of knowing and speaking Hebrew? But we're going to see it's much, much deeper. Everything in Am Yisrael is deeper, simply because our land is not just a land, it's called Eretz HaKodesh. And our language is not just a language, it's called Lashon HaKodesh. And our coin is not just a coin, it's called Shekel HaKodesh. Our army is called Tzivot Hashem. Bekitzur, nothing in Am Yisrael is normal. And that's part of what it means to be part of the chosen people. Let's start with the Talmud Yerushalmi in source number one. The Yerushalmi Masechet Shabbat, Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel, reads as follows. Oh, of course. Are there any other sheets running around? There we go. The Talmud Yerushalmi reads as follows: Kol mishu kavua be'eretz Yisrael, whoever lives permanently in Eretz Yisrael, vochel chul yo betahara, he eats his chulin in tahara. That is, you all know what we all do: netilat yadayim, right? But midoraita, you only really have to do netilat yadayim for holy food, for truma, echala, bikurim, a korbanot. But nevertheless, we do netilat yadayim for secular food as well. So somebody who lives in Israel does netilat yadayim for secular food, umedaber bilshon hakodesh, and speaks Hebrew, muftach lo shumichaye olam haba. He is guaranteed a share in the world to come. And that's a pretty big reward, that for speaking Hebrew, reward number one is to have a share in Olam Haba. What does that mean and why? That we're going to learn more in depth pretty soon. Remind me of your name?
Tamar.
Tamar what?
Girl's Mom.
Yeah. Let's jump to source number six. Vayikra Rabba, a famous midrash, maybe somebody remembers it, Rashi brings this, that Am Yisrael in Egypt were not religious. They were of the Avodah Zarah. Nevertheless, Hashem redeemed us for four reasons. Anybody remember the Midrash? What were the four things that our forefathers kept in Egypt?
Brit Milah.
No, they didn't do Brit Milah. They continued dressing Hebrew, speaking Hebrew. Sorry?
Your names?
Hebrew names, Yafeh. No immoral relations. Yes, sir. Very impressive. And they didn't tattle on each other. Okay, it says four, but there's a different list of four. Altogether, it's five things. So we see in this Midrash in Source 6 that speaking Hebrew is what brought the Ge'ula, what brought us redemption from Egypt. Now let's jump to Source 11, the Sifrei. What is Sifrei? Midrash Halacha. Midrash Halacha, as usually when you say Midrash, you think of stories, right? Midrash Rabbah, Tanchuma, Yalkut Shimoni. But there's also Midrash Halacha, that is Mechilta on Sefer Shmot, Sifra on Vayikra, it's also called Torat Kohanim, and on Bamidbar and Dvarim, it's called Sifrei. In other words, what we're going to learn now is a halachic midrash. It's not just a story. There are halachic ramifications. On Dvarim Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Tet, V'limadtem ultamed b'neichem l'daber bam, we all know this from Vaya im Shamoa, that you shall speak, you shall teach them to your children and speak in it. What does that mean, speak in it? It should say you should teach Torah and talk Torah. What does it mean, l'daber bam, to speak in them is a better translation? Chazal say that in addition to teaching Torah to your children, mikan amru k'shatinok matchil l'daber, aviv medaber imo bilshon hakodesh. You should speak to your children in Hebrew. Umilamdo Torah, and teach your children Torah from a young age. V'imein chazal te'etzol, actually brought in the Shulchan Aruch, that the first sentence that a Jewish child should say is Torah tziva lanu Moshe Moasha Kilat Yaakov. V'im ein medaber imo lashon hakodesh ve'ino melamdo Torah ra'ui lo ki'ilu kovro she'ne'amar v'limadtem otamed b'neichem l'daber bam limban yirbu yimeichem v'imei v'neichem. What does that mean? If you speak to your children in Hebrew, you will live a long life. Interesting. Chevra? Speaking Hebrew, we see, brings the share in Olam Haba, brings the redemption, the Geula, and also brings a share in, brings long life in this world. Now this is interesting, because you all know that there are four mitzvot in the Torah which bring long life. What do you remember from the Ten Commandments? Kibud Av V'Em, right? Honoring your parents brings a long life. What are the other? Shiluach HaKen.
Shiluach HaKen.
Yafeh. Chasing away the mother bird in order to take her eggs. The third is less famous. Third and fourth are less famous. The third is Eifa Ve'Eifa. To have honest weights. Right? Before there were digital scales, you probably saw this in old museums, they would have weights, where you put a weight, it says on it 1 kilo, and it's made out of metal, and the government measured that this is a kilo, or a half a kilo, or a quarter kilo, or a pound, whatever it's written on it, and you would put that on one scale, and if you want to buy apples, you that way you measure, when it equals out, what is a kilo of apples? Okay. But what people used to do is they used to put the weights in salt, which erodes the metal. And therefore, even though it originally was a kilo, eventually it goes down to 90 or 80% of that. And that is how store owners used to cheat the customers. Comes the Torah and says, if you have honest weights, that brings you a share, a long life. Mitzvah number four, which brings a long life, we see here, is to speak Hebrew. Okay? Now, there also are other mitzvot which bring ge'ula. We saw speaking Hebrew brings ge'ula. There's also, for example, Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh v'shaveh b'tzedakah. Chazal say that if we have a judgment system, din Torah, that will bring the ge'ula. Another place it says on the pasuk, if we bring give tzedakah, that will bring ge'ula. Another place it says, Kol ha-mevi davar b'shem omro, mevi ge'ula la'olam. Have you ever heard that? If you bring something in the name of he who said it, that brings ge'ula to the world. Has anybody heard that? Oh, now you heard it. Who said that? That's a good example of hypocrisy. A lot of hypocrisy. Yeah. People say that you have to bring something in the name of he who said it, and even that, they don't bring in the name of who said it. The answer is Amar Rabbi Lazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina. Should always bring something in the name of he who said it. All these things, there are certain things which bring Geula, and also Hebrew brings Geula, as we saw in Vayikra Rabbah. The same thing with Olam Haba. Anybody remember other things that Chazal tell us that if you do it, brings you a share in the world to come? Yeah? Walking 4 steps in Eretz Yisrael gives you a share in the world to come.
I think I heard that if you make 3 shidduchs that are successful.
Okay, that is a great old wives' tale. There's no source of that in Chazal. It is a great chesed, and you for sure deserve a lot of credit, but that's not on the list. You probably heard of saying Ashrei 3 times a day. Brings the share in the world to come. Actually, the Mishnah in Peah, many of you say it every day in the morning. Elu dvarim shadam ochel perotem bolam hazeh v'keren kayemet lo'olam haba. Kibud ava'eng, milut chasadim, hashkamat beit hamidrash, right? All these things. There are many mitzvot, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 mitzvot, which bring olam haba. Just like there are other mitzvot which bring gula. There are other mitzvot which bring long life. Girls? Speaking Hebrew is the only mitzvah which brings all 3 rewards. It's the only one. Which means that it is really in a special category. And the question is, why? Chazal tell us it brings you Olam Haba, it brings you long life in Olam Hazeh, and it brings the Geula. And that's today's topic. Why is it so important to speak Hebrew? Now, getting back to the Talmud Yerushalmi, we see there are 3 things on this list which bring a share in the world to come. Somebody who lives in the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael. Somebody who does netilat yadayim, he washes for secular food. Again, not just for korbanot, but also for regular bread, like you all, like we all do. And somebody who speaks Hebrew. Can anybody see what is the common denominator between these 3 concepts? Hebrew, living in the land of Israel, and washing the tilat yadayim for secular food. Chevra, all 4 of these are mitzvot, which reveal holiness and godliness, even in the secular. Right? And this is what's called kiddusha. Kiddusha is different from tahara. Do you remember the shiur that I gave you before Sukkot? On tama itz ketama pri? That part of the beauty of Eretz Yisrael is that everything in Eretz Yisrael is holy. Right? I even remember we brought the example that today with Corona, you're not supposed to kiss mezuzot. But if you want, you can kiss the doorpost. You can kiss the building. Because all of the buildings in Eretz Yisrael are holy. And walking in Eretz Yisrael is holy. And the apple that you ate for lunch today is holy. And the rocks are holy. And the Rambam brings us down lahalacha, that Chazal, they used to roll in the sand and kiss the rocks of Eretz Yisrael. Because in Eretz Yisrael, the army is holy, the fruit is holy, everything is holy. Even the secular. Now it's the same thing, somebody who washes netilat yadayim for the secular. Again, mida oraita, you really only have to do netilat yadayim when you're eating korbanot. But he who also does netilat yadayim for secular bread, that also is revealing godliness and kedusha, even in the secular. Chevra, why did we bring this? Because our topic is speaking Hebrew. And when you speak Hebrew, when we speak Hebrew, we are making even the mundane, even the secular, holy. Chevra, let's look together in Source 2, where I brought for you from the Shulchan Aruch, in Or HaChaim, Siman Shin Zayin, Piskat Tet Zayin. Now, most of you probably have learned that l'chatchila on Shabbat, you should deal with holy things, right? Rather than reading newspapers or doing your homework, right? Even reading for school, you should really learn Torah. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, that you shouldn't read history books, war books on Shabbat. Haga, Look in the second line of source 2. What is... Oh, no. Did I turn this off? Hello? Hello? Oh, you're all here.
Can we hear you?
Oh, thank you. I got worried. Who is Hagga in the Shulchan Aruch? The Rama. You all know the Ashkenazic Minag, when it's a little different from the Sephardic. The Rama points it out. And here he says, V'nir el-dakdek, second line of source 2. Hada asur likro besichat chulin v'sipurei milchamot. That which says you shouldn't read about wars, secular books, newspapers on Shabbat. Hainu davkeim k'tuvim b'lashon la'az. This is only if they are written in a foreign language. Aval bilshon ha-kodesh, if you read a newspaper, shari, you are allowed to read a secular newspaper on Shabbat if it's in Hebrew. By the way, the Mishnah Berurah points out, obviously, it's better to learn Torah in Hebrew, in English, whatever language you can learn Torah. But if you want to read a secular newspaper or history book or book on psychology on Shabbat, do it in Hebrew. Explains the Mishnah Berurah why. Source number 3, Sif Katan Samach Gimel. Dalashon Be'atzmo Yesh Bo Kedusha. Because the language has inherent holiness. Chevra, if you are at supper tonight, by the way, this is something here in the Midrashah, I think almost every year there is one table in the Chadar Ochel where the girls agree, this is the Hebrew table. And they just speak Hebrew. They have that this year? No? It's a good idea. You can start it tonight. Because if you ask somebody to pass the salt, that's secular, you know. It's nothing wrong with asking for salt, as long as you don't put in too much, right? It's unhealthy. But if you ask, Tavir li bevakasha et hamelach, you have fulfilled 5 mitzvot. And you have elevated that, pass the salt, to be holy. However, the next source will blow your socks off. Sarah Hoffman, you ready? Rosh Yeah.
Rosh Va.
Oh,
I have a question.
Shalom. I see Eliana joined us. Yeah.
I have a question.
Shalom. Who's speaking? Isabel.
Isabel.
Okay.
Yeah. I came like a minute or two late, so I don't know if you said this, but for all of this, when I'm talking about Hebrew, is that like modern day Hebrew? Like
I was waiting for somebody to ask that question. You know what? Please remind me in another minute after we do the next source to answer your question. Don't let me forget, okay?
Okay.
Chevra, just to finish off the previous point, the next source will blow your socks off. Source number 5 in the Shulchan Aruch, Yorodea Siman Reish Lamed Zayin. You all know, if you ever watched a law television program, it used to be Perry Mason, in America, probably in South Africa too, if they bring a witness, first thing they do is they swear him in on a Bible. He puts his hand on the Bible and says, I swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God. Right? Something like that. Mm-hmm. Where does that come from? It comes from Judaism. In Judaism, in a Beit Din, today we don't make Shavuot anymore, but when a Beit Din wanted to verify that you're telling the truth, they would make you swear in God's name, while holding a Sefer Torah, that you are telling the truth. Because sometimes there are certain cases that it's hard to know. Reuven says this thing, Shimon says that thing. How do you know who's telling the truth? So one of the parties sometimes has to swear, sometimes both parties. Bekitzur, what happens if there's no Sefer Torah? An educated guess, what would you swear on, even before a Tanakh? Tefillin, or mezuzah, right? It's also on parchment, it's also... Right, with the holy letters, you put your hand on a mezuzah, and you swear that you're telling the truth. If there's no mezuzah, no tefillin, then you take a Tanakh, a printed Tanakh. If there's no Tanakh, you take a Gemara. Take a Shulchan Aruch. What happens if there's no holy books? Says the Shulchan Aruch, and this is brought down the Halacha. Im Natal, source 5. Im Natal biyadok tav ashurit. If the letters are written in printed, what we call print, right, regular aleph, bet, not script, but print Hebrew. Afilu eino rak chochma chitzonit. Even if it is something secular. Say you have a book in chemistry, a book in biology, a history book, but it's written in Hebrew. Oh, Aleph Bet She'en Bo Rak Altiot. Say you have a chart, say an eye chart, right? You know, you go to the optometrist and he shows you letters and you have to say what you see. You know, if you see it, you can't see it, right? There are no words there, but oil in Israel, they show you letters. Aleph Bet Gimel, right? Im Nishba Bahen Vehin Biyado Havi Shvua. That is a kosher oath in Beit Din. Girls, you could take a can of Coca-Cola, which says Coca-Cola, or that cup, which says Midrasha on it. You could take a Bazooka Joe comic, if it's in Hebrew, and swear an oath on Beit Din, and it is a kosher oath. Why? Because it's in Hebrew. And this is point number one. Why is it so special to speak Hebrew? Just like the land of Israel takes the secular and makes it holy, so too, washing for secular food, you make it holy. So too, when you tell a joke in Hebrew, you could talk about the movies, you could talk about the weather, you could talk about the fashions, whatever you are talking about, even if it's secular, you're making it holy. Now, before I get to Isabel's question, Chevron, notice how awesome this is. Because if I were to draw, say this is a person's speech, okay? In life, over life, maybe 10% of your speech is Kodesh, right? Davening, learning, right? I hope not more than 3% of your speech is Tamei. What would be Tamei speech, for example? Lashon Hara. Cursing, right? Most speech is not Kodesh, and it's not Tamei. It's not holy, and it's not bad. Most speech is in the middle, right? But if you speak all your secular things in Hebrew, you are broadening Kiddushah to cover 97% of your speech. And that is an awesome concept. Can you imagine living and speak? Every word that you speak is holy. Again, on Shabbat, it's best just to do holy things, but if it's in Hebrew, it's holy. Okay, so the question was asked. Sorry?
No, answer Isabel's first. I'll ask after.
Okay. So Isabel asked a very good question. Is modern Hebrew Lashon HaKodesh? The answer is, first of all, yes. And you don't have to take my word for it. Open up any dictionary. All of you know that English dictionaries, serious English dictionaries, they tell you at the beginning of every word, at the beginning of every entry, where the word is from, right? Old Latin, old French, right? Old German, right? You know what I'm talking about? In Hebrew, a good Hebrew dictionary, like Ben Yehuda, like Evan Shoshan, every word, it tells you where it is found, in Tanakh, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara. And you'll see that almost all of Hebrew is really Lashon HaKodesh. Somebody will ask, what about words like televisia, right? Telephone. That doesn't bother me. How do I know? Why doesn't it bother me? Because Chazal did the same thing. Does anybody know what is Ambatya? I remember when Batya said her Dvar Torah and said, "Hi, Shabbat Shalom, I'm Batya." And my daughter, who was with us for Shabbat, said, "What's she talking about the bathtub?" Ambatya is a Greek word, but Chazal brought it into English. Sanhedrin. You all know what a Sanhedrin is? Right? Chazal took a Greek word and brought it into Lashon HaKodesh. Because that is the nature of all languages. All spoken languages undergo evolution. Right? Just like I remember in high school, do they still teach Chaucer? That was terrible. Chaucer in English literature? Maybe in South Africa they do. Yeah?
Yeah.
Shakespeare, I'm sure you learned, right?
Yeah.
Dickens, Charles Dickens, you learned, right? Dickens and Shakespeare's English, and Kalvachomer Chaucer's English, which is even older, it is very different from modern English, because languages evolve. Similarly, that's exactly what happened to the Hebrew language, right? You asked about modern Hebrew. Chevra, if you look at the Hebrew of the Torah, you don't have to be a linguist to realize, has anybody realized that the Hebrew in Yeshayahu is a little different from the style in the Torah? Have you noticed that? Anybody who knows even a little Hebrew, you see it's a different type of Hebrew. And then when you learn Mishnah, that is a later type of Hebrew. And then modern Hebrew is also a later type of Hebrew. Because naturally, all languages evolve. Just like Shakespeare. You know where you know this from? Maybe. You know it from English. Has anybody seen the old French words that Rashi sometimes brings on the Torah?
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes he'll bring a word in old French. And I had a friend in yeshiva. His name was Shmuel. He's from France. And when I was learning Rashi, and I would come across a word in French, I would ask him, and he would never know. So after 3-4 times, I said, I thought you're from France. You don't speak French? He says, Rashi speaks Old French. By the way, if you look in English translations, sometimes it says OF. That's Old French. Ironically, I'll add parenthetically, there was a professor, a Jewish professor named Dermastadter, who about 100 years ago pieced together a dictionary of Old French based on Rashi, Tosfot, and many Jewish sources that brought books from words from Old French that the French forgot. Are you all with me?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the contributions of the Jewish people. We've been everywhere, and we always knew how to read and write, and we kept a lot of things that even the Gentiles themselves lost. Anyway, Old French is not New French. Old English is not Lou English. And inevitably, the Torah's Hebrew is a little different from Yeshayahu, which is a little different from Mishneh, and a little different. Girls, the Talmud Yerushalmi that we saw in Masechet Shabbat, when Chazal tell us that if you speak Lashon HaKodesh, you have a share in the world to come. What Lashon HaKodesh are they talking about? Obviously, they're talking about Lashon HaKodesh in their time, which is Mishneh Hebrew, which is a little different from Tanakhic Hebrew. It didn't bother them. Because it's natural that languages undergo evolution. So that's answer number two. Answer number one, just check in the dictionary. It's black and white. Modern Hebrew is from Tanakhic Lashon HaKodesh. Point number two, it doesn't bother me that there are other words coming in from other languages, because that's inevitable. That's in all languages, and it was also in the Torah and in Mishneic Hebrew. But, and here's something very interesting, Dafka modern Hebrew evolved less than French and English and most languages. Why? Girls, how do languages evolve when they're spoken? Right? When they're spoken, and somebody comes from France to England, somebody comes from Germany to England, slang gets into different languages. But Hebrew, for 2,000 years, was used for learning, it was used for davening, it was not a spoken language, it was in the freezer. So Hebrew davka, ironically, evolved, underwent less evolution than most languages because it was in the freezer. You all understand what I mean? Not only that, Eliezer ben Yehuda, who revived modern Hebrew about 100 years ago, he, davka, did something very interesting. However, we mentioned a minute ago that sometimes Mishneic Hebrew is a little different from Tanakhic Hebrew. Sometimes Ben Yehuda had to decide between the two. Anybody want to take an educated guess? When he had to choose in modern Hebrew, should we use the ancient version or the Mishneic version, what do you think he preferred? The original. Because the whole idea of reviving the Hebrew language was to chadesh yamenu kikedem, to go back to the original. If so, ironically, modern Hebrew, Eliezer ben Yehuda, turned the clock back. You understand what I'm saying? He turned evolution back whenever he could, so that modern Hebrew today, regarding certain things, is even more original Lashon HaKodesh than Mishnaic Hebrew. In other words, the answer to the question is, yes, modern Hebrew is Lashon HaKodesh. So, tonight for supper, even if you are in bidud in the apartments, ask your friends, Tavi li bevakasha et hamelach, and elevate your meal and your salt to be holy. Okay, Chevra? That is point number one. Tamara, you wanted to say something? Somebody wanted to say something? Okay.
Yeah, I had a question.
Yeah, vakasha, Eliana. I forgot to tell you people, you people are being recorded. So, but I don't worry about all your questions are good. Go for it.
You're saying how Lashon Kodesh, like 97% and like the 3% Lashon Hara is bad. But like, what if you speak Lashon Hara in Hebrew?
Does that make it like that? We're going to see the Rambam. I don't know if we'll get there today, but maybe next week. The Rambam says it's more serious. Did everyone hear Eliana's question? The Rambam says it's worse to curse and to talk Lashon Hara in Hebrew than it is in other languages. Does that mean it's better to speak English? No. It just means don't talk Lashon Hara. Don't curse. Yeah. By the way, well, you have Toranut.
Yeah.
Go and be altruistic. Kol hakavod. Chevra.
Also, I had a question.
Just raise your hand, because I don't see who's speaking.
Eliana.
Okay. Yeah.
You said that the whole like swearing into the Bible ever came from here. What do they do now in Israel?
What, in secular courts?
No, like in Israel, yeah, in Israel's
courts. In Batei Din, in halacha courts, we don't swear anymore. By the way, if anybody's ever been to a swearing-in ceremony of their friends in the army, has anybody been to a tekes hashba'ah?
Yeah, I saw, and my friend, she did it with a Tanakh.
Oh, so they do it with a Tanakh, but the religious boys, they don't yell, Ani nishba, they say, Ani matzhir, because today the custom is never to swear. Even if you're telling the truth, it's better not to swear. Okay? Now, kal v'chomer, if you have a friend who says, I swear to God I'm telling the truth, tell them, don't swear to God. Just talk. Right? Because you really should not swear. Chevra, let's go on to the next point. Source number 6, Vayikra Rabba. Yeah, somebody else wanted to say something. Isabel.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I apologize. I shouldn't say your name because you are going down in history on the tape and everyone will know who it is. Well, I guess there are a lot of girls with your name. Anyway, go for it.
It's okay. Are you, if Hebrew is your only language, then, are you not supposed to talk, if you're, in the bathroom or somewhere that, you should?
Fantastic question. You know what? The Yavetz asked your question. Once you ask, let's see it inside. Where is Rav Yaakov Emdin, the Yavetz? Anybody see it? It is source number 25. Girls, jump to source 25. Rav Yaakov Emdin, in Shut, in his responsa, Chelik Aleph Siman Yud, writes as follows. He answers exactly that question. And he says, Hagea batzmecha, imagine to yourself, Kishayu Yisrael al Admatam, when we were in the land of Israel. He's writing this, obviously, dreaming, Bezrat Hashem, we will return to the land of Israel. Ulishonam Lashon HaKodesh. And we spoke Hebrew as our language. Hayu b'vaday mishtamshim bo af b'beit HaKisei. Of course, if you'll excuse me, but it happens. Say there's no toilet paper, right? And you ask your roommate, can you please bring me toilet paper? In the olden days, they used to say that in English. That was the language of the Tanakh. That was the language of our forefathers. Ulechol Tzorkam, they used Hebrew for everything. When they went to work, when they went to the marketplace. Afal pisha bli safek yesh kidusha bilashon gamitzad atzmo. Even though, like we learned before, everything that you say in Hebrew is holy, Nevertheless, it's not like saying God's name in the bathroom. In other words, there are different levels of Kedusha. To say God's name in the bathroom is Asur. To say even Shalom, which is one of God's lesser used names, that's also you're not allowed to use in the bathroom. But to say Boker Tov, can you please bring me toilet paper or something like that? Reading newspapers, I don't know if you, Bezrat Hashem, by the end of the year, this is a very common problem. I remember when I came to yeshiva, and you're learning Torah all day and all night, you're not allowed to learn Torah in the bathroom. So what do? Excuse me. If your mind starts wandering, you think of what you just learned, what you're about to learn. If it hasn't happened to you yet, it will happen to you. So what do yeshiva boys do? What do rabbis do? They keep secular books in the bathroom, secular newspapers. Now, in Israel, like you asked, if a person's secular language is Lashon HaKodesh, can you read a secular book in the bathroom in Hebrew? And the answer is yes. Because it is holy enough to make it holy, that you can swear on it in Beit Din, and that you can read it on Shabbat. By the way, obviously the Mishnah Berurah says that it's better to learn Torah on Shabbat than to read history books in Hebrew on Shabbat, right? Nevertheless, it is enough. But it's not enough Kiddusha that you can't read it in the bathroom. You understand there are different levels. Chevra, let us go back to source number 6.
Question.
Yeah, Lakasha. Yeah. Who's that? Orly?
Yeah.
Well, go for it.
Are you allowed to listen to, I don't know if there's a difference, but there is, but Hebrew or Jewish music in the bathroom or shower?
Yeah, it's the same answer. If it's psukim, you shouldn't. But if it's, you know, secular music that you hear on Galei Tzahal, on the radio, Reshet Gimel, there's no problem. That's exactly the same answer what the Yavid says. Okay. Chevra, let's go on. Vayikra Rabba. A second point. So point number one was that, why is it important to speak Hebrew? Because it turns even your secular into holy. Just like Eretz Yisrael. Point number two, let us look in Vayikra Rabba, Perek Lamed Bet, source number 6. Rav Huna Amar B'Shem Bar Kafra. We read this quickly, now we'll learn it more in depth. Bishvil arba dvarim nigalu Yisrael mimitzrayim. Our fathers, forefathers were redeemed from Egypt because of four things. Notice, they didn't believe in God. They didn't do Brit Milah. Adrabah, Chazal tells us that they served idols. If so, that's what's playing in the background. So why is God redeeming us? They kept four things. Shilo shinu et shmam, they kept their Hebrew names. Vet leshonam, they continued speaking Hebrew. Velo amru lashon hara, they didn't tattle on each other. Velo nimtza b'nehem echad mehem parutz be'erva, they kept their modesty. And there's another girsa, which says, Shilo chilfu simlotan, they continued dressing with the Hebrew dress. How do we know this from? Lo shinu et shman. How do we know that they continued using Hebrew names? Continues the Midrash, Ruvain v'Shimon nachtin, Ruvain v'Shimon salkin. They went down to Egypt with Hebrew names. Why is Ruvain called Ruvain? Ra'a Hashem bo'oni, Hashem saw my difficulty. Shimon, Shama Hashem, God heard my voice. Levi, Leah calls him Levi, hapam Leviti, my husband accompanies me. Yehuda, hapam ode'et Hashem, Yehuda, ode'a, I thank God, right? These are Hebrew names. When they left Egypt, 210 years later, Shevet Reuven was still called Reuven. Shevet Shimon, Shevet Levi, the names did not change. What's the big deal? Because I would have thought, when Jews come to America, they start speaking English. And my grandfather, he was born Aaron Chvatki. That was the original name in Russia. Aaron Chvatki. They told him in America, Aaron, that sounds too Jewish. You need an American name. So he started calling himself, instead of Aaron, Harry. And Chvatki, they said again, that's too Jewish. Shorten it to Chvat. But there's no Chet. So it became Shvat. And then when I made Aliyah, I Hebraicized it to Shvat. Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute. But the idea is that it's the most natural thing in the world to adopt the language. Lo shinu et shman Reuven v'Shimon, right? They didn't, lo hayu korein liyuda Rufa. They didn't call Yehuda Rufus, and Reuven Luliani, and Liosef Listius, and Binyamin Alexandri. But they kept their Hebrew names. Girls, question. Why would Jews in Egypt think of naming their children Rufus, Lulianus, Alexander? What are these names? They're not Egyptian names. They're Greek names.
Greek.
So what are Chazal telling us? Chazal are speaking to the Jews in their generation. There obviously were Mityavnim. You heard of the Mityavnim? Jews who began assimilating and accepted upon themselves Greek names. Chazal are telling them, no. Even when our forefathers assimilated into Egyptian society, they kept their Hebrew names. Chevra, I'm going to ask the same question now that I asked before. Can somebody please find the common denominator between the fact that they continued speaking Hebrew? Even though they weren't religious, they continued speaking Hebrew. They continued using and giving Hebrew names. They continued using Hebrew dress. They didn't tattle on each other to the Egyptians. The women did not give themselves over to the Egyptian men. They kept their tzniut. Can somebody see a common denominator between these five things? That there's something uniting all of them. National identity. The Jews in Egypt were not religious. Again, they served the same idols that the Egyptians did. But they kept their national identity. National unity. Hebrew. Hebrew names. Like I mentioned before, when the Jews came from Europe to America, my great-grandparents spoke Yiddish to each other, but they spoke to their children in English. Why? They wanted to show we're American. My father, he has a Hebrew name, but they gave him an American name to show we're proud to be American. Anybody have in your family, I'm sure all your grandfathers have English names, right? Harry Irving Seymour, right? Tzvi Hirsch became Harry, and Shimon became Seymour, right? What about last names? Anybody have last names that when they moved to America or England or South Africa, the family changed it to blend in, yeah?
My last name's Cohen, so I don't know if it was to blend in, but it was changed.
It was Cohen.
No, it's Cohen.
Oh, so that was very common that they saw somebody Jewish, your probably name is Cohen. Right. In Ellis Island, there was a lot of things. But Chevra, in my mother's family, the name originally was Lefkowitz. And when they came to America, some of them changed it to Lefko. They lost their wits. But the idea was to become more American. I know Cohens who anglicized their name to Cowan. We had a girl here from whose name was Graham. Now, that is not a Jewish name. I asked her, what was the original name? She said it was Greenberg. By the way, girls from England, that's the most common. A lot of the girls from England have mamash, waspy, non-Jewish sounding names. Because the more anti-Semitism there is, the more you want to blend in. Okay? Anybody have that in their family, that the name was changed when they moved to a new country? No? But you all know people like that.
Yeah?
Yeah? Who has that in your family?
My last name was changed.
What was the original name?
Rosenblatt.
Rosenblatt. Oh, that's very Jewish. And then it was shortened to Rosen. Right.
Yeah.
Chevra, to the same extent, again, a name is your identity. When I made Aliyah, just like my parents and grandparents, they wanted to blend into America, if I am proud of my Jewish identity, I want a Jewish name. So I changed the Shvat to Shvat, right? Like the Hebrew month. David Ben-Gurion, that's not his original name. His original name was David Green. But he was a proud Israeli, he wanted an Israeli name. Golda Meir, you all heard of Golda Meir? Her original name was Meyerson. Shimon Peres, that's a good example. Shimon Peres, his original name was Persky. Peres means a vulture. He was looking for a similar name in Hebrew. His first cousin moved to America. Has anybody ever heard of the Academy Award-winning actress Lauren Bacall? She won Oscars, very famous. Bacall, that was to fit into America. Her original last name was Persky. She's first cousins, if I remember correctly, with Shimon Peres. But she went to America. He went to Israel. And everyone is proud of their new identity. The same thing, by the way, with your first name. My older brothers have English names. That was very common in America. Because it was also in the Holocaust, you know, a lot of Jews saved their lives by having non-Jewish names. Right? If the Germans checked your papers. And so my oldest brother is Mordechai Eliezer. But he was given a name M. Elliot. And we call that in the family, jokingly, we call that a pogrom name, in case there's ever a pogrom in America. He can take out his ID and it says, Elliot, I'm not Jewish. Right? By the time I was born, and by the way, the turning point was the Six-Day War. After the Six-Day War, most Orthodox Jews gave their children Hebrew names. And that's why you have here, in Midrash HaRova, you have names like Zahava, Eliana, Sarah, Tamar, Noah, Orly, right? I just look at the names, Aviva, right? There is a mitzvah to give a Jewish name, because that's a sign I am proud of my Judaism. By the way, sometimes non-Jewish names even have messages that you don't even realize. I have a long footnote in my sefer about non-Jewish names. A lot of the girls' names, also boys' names, are names of Greek goddesses. Samantha, Jennifer, right? If you look up the source of these names, these are names of Avodah Zarah. I once was giving a shiur to Israelis, and one of the girls, her name is Natalie, and she asked me, I know Natalie is not Hebrew, it's French. Do you know what it means? And I avoided the question. By the way, sometimes you'll notice that teachers try avoiding questions if it has an unpleasant answer. And I didn't want to say, so I basically avoided the question. She said, do you know? I'm not going to lie. So I said, yeah, but if you're really interested, look it up after class in Google. She looked it up in class after Google. Natalie is a Christian name. The word natal, like neonatal, means birth. And the Christians call Christmas natal. Natalie is a Christian name. And so too a lot of the names that are flowing around America, names like Jason, Peter, Paul, Mary, right? These are all Christian names. John, J-O-H-N. These are Christian names. And if a person is proud of their Jewish identity, he will want to use his Hebrew name. And that is part of the idea of, by the way, this just to tell you the end of the story, this girl Natalie, after she Googled it, she wanted to choose a Hebrew name. So she was thinking, and she spoke it over with her parents, asked her if they don't mind. She didn't have a Hebrew name. And she came up with the name Talia. Sort of like Natalie, sounds similar. Talia, it's also an abbreviation, Tov Lahodot Lashem, Talia. By the way, are there any girls in the program named Talia? Or Tali. Tali is usually a shortened version of Talia. Right?
That's yeah.
That's a very common and a beautiful Hebrew name. Bikitsur, You know when I understood this idea of how a name is really your identity? Has anybody ever heard of Alex Haley? In the 1970s, there was a best-selling book. Afterwards, it was turned into a movie called Roots. Has anybody ever heard of Kunta Kinte? It was a very famous movie. It was a best-selling book. In the 60s, 70s, people were going and tracing up their roots. I'm sure some of you did a project on your roots, tracing your family to Europe, here, there, making a family tree. Now, what was the problem with the blacks? Today they're called Afro-Americans in America. They have a problem with their roots because all of them were brought to America against their will as slaves. And so all the Americans are tracing their roots back, and the blacks had a fadiha. They were embarrassed. And then Alex Haley, this American author, succeeded in tracing his roots back to Africa. He went, I don't remember all the details, I think his family was from Alabama or something like that. He went to the archives in Alabama. He knew that his name was Haley. The master's name was Haley. There was a slave, to make a long story short, his great-great-grandfather was named Kunta Kinte and was bought by this Mr. Haley. He traced the archives, found the boat that brought Kunta Kinte from Africa to America, went to Africa and found a tribe from the area where the boat came. And you know, these primitive tribes in Africa, they don't know how to read or write. They don't have written archives. But what they do is they take one of the elders who has a good memory, and he remembers the family history of everybody's, what we call yichus. You all know what yichus is, right? And they asked him through a translator, was there a Kunta Kinte in the tribe? And he said right away, Kunta Kinte was the son of him and the father of him and the father of him. And he, no, the son of the son of the son of the son. And he was stolen by the white man. Bingo. And he found his roots. And then he wrote this best-selling book. Afterwards, there was sort of a scandal because it turned out that not everything was 100% true. That part of it was he filled in different stories. But it shook America because the blacks never realized where they were coming from. Now, why do I tell you the story about Kunta Kinte? Because in the very first chapter, Kunta Kinte is stolen. He's brought to America. And his master says, what are we going to call you? With a southern accent. And Kunta says, Kunta, I have a name, Kunta Kinte. And the master says, no, that's an African name. We're going to call you a modern name, a good Western name. Let's call you Toby. And Kunta says, no, Toby, Kunta. And the master says, no, I said we're going to call you Toby. No, Toby. The master takes a whip, whips the slave. This was going on in South Africa not too long ago, right? And says, no, your name is Toby. No, Toby, Kunta. Whips him again, keeps whipping him until he says, okay, my name is Toby. Now, why was Kunta Kinte so adamant to keep his name Kunta Kinte? You all see that? Because your name, that is your identity. For the same reason why the master wanted to change it to Toby. Because your name expresses what your identity is about. The same thing with your language. The most natural thing in the world was for Jews in Egypt to change their names to Egyptian names, to speak Egypt. But no, our forefathers were careful to keep their Hebrew cultural identity. Now notice, ironically, the first Zionists, David Ben-Gurion, Eliezer Ben-Yehuda, those who we're talking about, they were not religious, but they were very fond of Jewish identity. And that's why they Hebraicized their names. And that's why they revived the Hebrew language, because they were proud of being Jews. Do you all see? The same thing with Hebrew dress. They wanted to keep their culture. What about tattling on each other? Here, I'll give you a nice Dvar Torah for Pesach, for Leil HaSeder, wherever you may be. Chevra, another thing I learned from Alex Haley in the book Roots was that how did the white masters, how did they manage to control 300 black slaves? Okay, yeah, the master has a gun. But it's just one of him. There are 300 of them, and they're all big and strong. Chevra, you have to remember, Dafka, that's interesting. There's a picture in the book of Alex Haley with his, whatever it is, third, fourth cousins in Africa. And they look totally different. He is a big, strong guy, also light, relatively light colored skin, brown. And his cousins in Africa, they're little runts. Why are the blacks in America so much bigger and stronger than their cousins in Africa, than their descendants? Ever just put one and one together. Which people were stolen to be slaves? Just the strongest one, right? A slave dealer is not going to steal somebody who's just a little runt. Now, on the boat ride to America, they kept them in subhuman conditions. They gave them terrible food. A lot of them died on the way. Who survived the trip from Africa to America? The strongest of the strongest. Now, also when they were slaves, they were not given such good food. They were not given good medical care. They're slaves. So who survived all the years of slavery? The strongest of the strongest of the strongest. Who did they marry? The women who were the strongest of the strongest of the strongest. And that's why you will find 90% of the NBA are these huge, tall, fluent, super coordinated blacks who really are not genetically exactly the way their cousins were in Africa. Do you all see that? That's what's called natural selection. Now, why do I mention this? So if the slaves are all big and strong, stronger than the masters, and the master just has one or two guns, how does he keep the slaves? Alex Haley writes this in his book, tattling on each other. It's part of slave culture is to get them to tattle on each other. Because, and it's not difficult, because if they don't have good food and you offer them some chocolate, a steak, anybody who tattles about somebody who's planning on escaping and going north, right? For those who aren't from America, the slaves were in the south, and if they ran to the north, they would have freedom, right? Sky, where are you from? Oh, but you know, do you know about that? The North and the South in America?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Bikitsur, part of slave mentality, part of slave culture is to tattling on each other. Our forefathers in Egypt, that was one of the things. They did not tattle on each other. They showed national unity, national solidarity. They didn't tattle, even though it's natural for slaves to tattle on each other. The same thing regarding Tzniut. I mentioned before that Alex Haley, like most blacks in America, are brown. Very often light brown. Why do they look totally different from their cousins in Africa? Alex Haley writes about this in his book, that part of slave culture was that the women, slaves, had no choice. They used to give themselves over to the masters. Chevra, they don't have a choice. It's a question of either being raped by the master, or giving yourself voluntarily, in that way at least, to gain a new dress, gain some chocolate. They really had no choice. So who's going to protect you? Your father can't protect you. He's a slave. Your husband can't protect you. He's a slave. A slave turns to the police. He's not going to protect you. You're a slave. So the women really have no choice, but they were very promiscuous, and they would very often give themselves. By the way, I once saw this. I forgot what the number is. Thomas Jefferson, one of the founding fathers of North America, had like 15 black children. Did you know that? And George Washington. All of them had slaves, and they had illegitimate children. And those children are more light brown than the original black. So again, Alex Haley looks totally different from his cousins. Why is this significant, girls? Our Jewish great-great-great-grandmothers in Egypt, they also were slaves. And the most natural thing was also to give themselves over to the Egyptian men. Chazal point out that there was just one woman who was with went with an Egyptian man. Anybody remember her name? Shlomit Bat Divri. There is one woman who, it says explicitly, she was with an Egyptian man, which apparently infers that all of the other Jewish women did not give themselves to the Egyptian slave owners. So now you see, to summarize the point, what's the common denominator between all of these things? And why did they bring Ge'ula? For the same reason that David Ben-Gurion and Eliezer Ben-Yehuda, and they were not religious, but their national identity brought national redemption, right? To come back to the land, to revive the Hebrew language, to revive the Jewish army. And it was the same thing with our forefathers in Egypt. Okay? Chevra, what about point number 3? It's a mitzvah. We saw in Source 11 that there is a mitzvah to speak Hebrew. Where do we learn it out from? Limadtem otam b'neichem, that if you speak Hebrew, you not only get a share in the world to come, you live long life, it brings the ge'ula. Does that mean that you're not allowed to speak English? All right, I'm speaking English. By the way, I should mention parenthetically, girls, we saw it in the Ramah in source number 2. Did anybody remember, how do you say a foreign language in Hebrew? La'az. La'az. Lamed, Ayin, Zayin. Now, if you look in a book of abbreviations, you will see that there are two ways of explaining this abbreviation. By the way, Yiddish is also called Laz. Yiddish is not the Hebrew language. It's just like German, just like, maybe it's a little better because, you know, only Jews speak it, but it is not Lashon HaKodesh. What does Laz stand for? You will find two abbreviations, and they are exactly correspond to these two points. One is Lashon Avodah Zara. Laz. The language of the paganists. And we prefer speaking Lashon HaKodesh, which is the Jewish language, not the language of the paganists. The other way that Laz is explained is Lashon Amzar. Lamed Ayin Zayin, Laz. And this corresponds to the second point. Right? We should be proud of our Jewish identity. If the French are proud of speaking French, and the Italians are proud of speaking Italian, kal vachomer, we are the chosen people, we should be proud of our Jewish identity. Even if you don't speak Hebrew to your husband, you should definitely know Hebrew. You know what? Even if you're not living in the land of Israel, how is it that Jews, who identify as Jews, how do they not know Hebrew? Point number 3 is that it is a mitzvah. I'll write this in black. Point number 3, we saw that it's a mitzvah. Question, does that mean yeah.
What was this? Well, the first one was Lashon Avodah Zarah, and the second one
Lashon Amzar.
Oh, Amzar. Thank you.
All right. What time do you have? I have two different times.
Seven.
It's 7? Okay.
Oh, what time is it right now?
Yeah. So we have another 4 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Chevra, what about speaking English? Rav Moshe Feinstein, let's look together in Source 13. He writes as follows. Umitzad etzem adavar, this is an Igrot Moshe, Evin ha'ezer, chele gimel, siman lamed hei. Umitzad etzem adavar, shemishanim et shmoteihem lishmot nochrim, as regarding somebody asked him about using non-Jewish names, is it asur? He says, "Vaday hu davar megunem ma'od." It's not good to give your children non-Jewish names. if your parents gave you a non-Jewish name. So they did, right? You didn't ask for it. Nevertheless, if you want really to, if you're proud of your Jewish identity, there are many girls here in Midrash HaBarova who, over the year, they started using their Hebrew name. As a matter of fact, there's a girl I still remember. I'm still in touch with her. Her name was Marlene. And in the middle, it was actually after this class, she came in the next week and says, I want to go by my Hebrew name, Menucha. And if you want, you can just change it. By the way, even if you don't have a Hebrew name, you know, sometimes people have Yiddish names, named after a grandmother or something like that. It's no problem to choose a Hebrew name. Just like that girl Natalie chose the name Talia. Right? And it's for sure, it's better to have a Hebrew name than a Yiddish name. Yiddish is Lashon Amzar. You could add on, right? If you have a Yiddish name and you want to add on a Hebrew name, that's also a possibility. You know what? We'll see this next time. Okay? Please remind me, we got up to source 13.
Thank you.
Vakasha, my pleasure.